My name is Amy Wheeler, and I'm your host for today. I had the good fortune of interviewing Joanne Lutz, who is a psychotherapist and also a yoga therapist. And there were so many threads that were so exciting to me in this work she and I did together today. The models of yoga versus psychotherapy and nervous system regulation, and kind of showing how they're all saying the same thing from different languages and different angles. I also love that Joanne is such a depth yogi and a psychotherapist, that it isn't a little light yoga on the side for her. It's a true integration of her many, many decades of yoga practice, along with many, many decades of psychotherapy and mental health training, and that she has been able to integrate them so beautifully together. So you're in for a real treat in our interview today, and I really hope you can hear that not only has Joanne been able to learn the yoga as well as the nervous system regulation as well as her mental health training in a cognitive way, but from the first moments, I think you'll hear it, that she's embodied it in her voice, in her pauses, the pacing, the presence, her ability to focus on the conversation. Everything about her that you're seeing is a regulated nervous system. And that comes from years of embodied practice. It's not a cognitive thing. So I really enjoyed our time together today so that we can see this integration of decades of work in different areas like yoga, as well as psychotherapy and nervous system regulation. Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour, Season 10, where we are going to go deeply into the eight limbs of yoga. Now let's go meet our guest. Welcome, Joanne. Thank you for being with us today on the Yoga Therapy Hour. It's just such an honor to get to interview you.
Yeah, thank you so much. I feel honored too.
Oh, good. So, Joanne, where are you joining us from today?
I'm in Northampton, Massachusetts, where I live.
Okay, and that's where you have your private practice also, I assume.
Yeah.
Great. So, Joanne, you and I both have this love of polyvagal-informed yoga. I mean, when I was looking at your website, I was like, oh my gosh, this is everything I'm completely fascinated by and interested in and love. It's kind of like seeing another person that has their mind completely absorbed in this idea of using yoga as a way to help with self-regulation. So I am so excited about our conversation today, but I would love to know, what kind of drew you into this idea of nervous system regulation and trauma-informed yoga, trauma-sensitive yoga? What brought you here?
Yeah, well, it's a story. When I graduated college in the 1970, I had lived through a lot of turmoil there. So I started studying yoga and noticed how much it calmed me, although I didn't know why. You know, I felt so great after a yoga class. So I've actually spent the last whatever number of years looking into what it was about yoga that was so healing. And I also made a vow that if I could bring it into my social work and psychotherapy, that I would do that. And I thank goodness, I have had the opportunity to do that. So I'd been using yoga for years to regulate myself. And I started using it, you know, in mini sessions. Like if I started to feel nervous, I would take some deep breaths or do some type of intervention that I had practiced in yoga. So it came rather naturally to me. So I was quite amazed when I found out that Dr. Bessel van der Kolk was offering a training in the early 2000s in something he called trauma-sensitive yoga, because I had held off bringing yoga specifically into my therapy work with clients because I felt that it was not part of the profession. And I don't like to step too far out of the expected behavior. So anyways, that liberated me, that course that I took, liberated me from those feelings that I shouldn't be bringing yoga into the session. So at that point, I started studying more deeply than I ever had before. You know, simple things like I was trained by Swami Satchidananda, and he told us always when we were doing a certain breathing practice, alternate nostril breathing, that we should end with an exhalation on the right nostril. Mm-hmm. And I never knew why, and I never asked. And there were a lot of suggestions or instructions like that in integral yoga. So I started looking into all of them. And that actually had led me into studying the autonomic nervous system before any of the major books had come out, before I knew about polyvagal theory. I just realized that there were certain aspects of yoga which were very similar to the way the autonomic nervous system worked. And so I could tell you what they are if you'd like.
I want to unpack some of this because what you just said has so much richness. So the first thing I heard you talk about was that you had this internal experience and you had the depth of a yogi. You'd studied, you know, Swami Satchidananda. This was not light for you. You had this experience and then you wanted to share it with others. And the nervous system gave you the Western language to talk about the mechanism of how this stuff works. Is that accurate?
Yes, absolutely. And I was just astonished to see how close the parallels were between what I learned in yoga and what I learned about anatomy and physiology later on.
I really think that is the entry point for all of us to bring this work into the healthcare profession, that healthcare wants to know what the mechanism is. How does it work? And so I think that the future of bringing yoga into things like psychotherapy and social work and physical therapy and OT and all of this is this idea of, hey, it's the mechanism. One of the main ones is nervous system. So I want to ask you one more question before you go on. I love that you are a licensed healthcare practitioner, but you also studied deep, deep yoga, like both were happening. It wasn't, I'm a licensed healthcare practitioner and I took a 200 hour and then we were done. And like, tell me about that. Tell me about really the depth of your training in both areas. And do you feel that is really important?
Well, my years of practicing yoga have been invaluable to me because my nervous system in some ways was already trained by the time I learned about nervous system regulation. Another example is having done yoga nidra for many years. At a certain point, I could more or less snap my fingers and go into that state. So that years of practice are invaluable.
And the client or the patient, whoever you're working with, they can feel that. They can feel that stability in your nervous system, whether they're conscious of it or not, I think.
Yeah. So there was another aspect of being a psychotherapist, which was troubling to me. And that was that the client needed the hour with me in order to feel secure or to feel like they were making progress. And what about the other 23 hours a day and the rest of the week? I wanted to be able to give them skills that they could use 24 hours a day, whenever they needed them.
So tell me more about those skills. Like what in your mind at that point were you thinking, oh, I need to create something to help people for their lives? What kinds of things were you thinking about?
Sure. Well, a lot of clients had trouble sleeping. They would wake up in the middle of the night and they couldn't sleep. And the typical intervention is to take medication. But I started teaching them. I was fascinated with the nostril dominance and the nostril changing every few hours, that they could control which side of the nervous system was most dominant at any particular time by breathing through one nostril or the other, or by sleeping on one side, or by placing their hand under the arm opposite from the nostril they wanted to be dominant. So maybe I should explain more about that whole side of yoga, but
I would love that if you want to. That'd be a fantastic way to go because I think people don't understand this kind of depth that we're talking about. Even, you know, I work at Polyvagal Institute and there's a lot of psychotherapists and social workers and physiotherapists that come in, but they don't understand these deep connections that you're about to talk about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, there's a branch of yoga called Swara Yoga, where this subtle nervous system is well known and defined in yoga. And there are three major, major subtle channels that begin at the base of the spine. And two of them end in the nostrils. The Ida ends at the left nostril and the Pingala ends at the right nostril. And they are described in ancient texts with the same words as the sympathetic nervous system and the parasympathetic nervous system. The energies are the same. So that means that the left nostril can be used to increase parasympathetic nervous system dominance, and the right nostril can be used to increase sympathetic nervous system dominance. And this information has been used traditionally in India in a practical way. I've read that if students having an exam the next day or later on, they have different ways of making sure that the right nostril is dominant. And in their system, that would mean that someone is more intellectually active and more present and able to, if they're going into a sports competition, they definitely want the right nostril dominant, and the left nostril would be more appropriate if they were going to be writing poetry or wanting to go to sleep. So that's what I taught my clients.
Do they get that? I mean, for some people, it sounds a little woo-woo, but literally, it's the key to dialing up your nervous system, getting that right nostril more dominant, or dialing down the nervous system, getting the left nostril more dominant.
Well, my clients didn't question me. I think a lot of that has to do with the quality of the relationship and the kind of trust that is built up, the way the therapist's nervous system is showing up in the session.
Yeah, absolutely. And I even love the specificity with which you said, when we're doing something like alternate nostril breathing, that the last one would be an exhale through the right, according to Swami Satchitananda. I learned that too in the Krishnamacharya tradition, that it's like the last one, let that heat go out of the right side and be complete, right? So I think those very specific ideas and techniques are important to learn over time, not just whipping out, 24 rounds of alternate nostril breathing and with a beginner, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I really appreciate my traditional education that was based in Ayurveda as well as yoga.
I saw that. I saw that you're an Ayurvedic practitioner or were. You studied to be one. And I think that to me is so critical. It's one of the defining factors of yoga therapy that helps us really understand this kind of subtle detail that you're talking about and how the techniques work, why they work, because it's such a sister school to yoga, right? That Ayurveda and yoga inform each other.
Yeah. An Ayurvedic practitioner traditionally had to be a yoga expert also.
Right.
Indeed.
Exactly. Yeah. So in your book, Trauma Healing in the Yoga Zone, you kind of introduced this very clear and practical framework for trauma-sensitive yoga. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that part of your origin story? Why trauma-informed or trauma-sensitive yoga?
That's the title that Dr. Van der Kolk used in his work, and that was the first training that I took on the application of yoga to psychotherapy. And I was very excited about it for a long time. The principles of trauma-sensitive yoga, which are most important, are the kinds of language that are used to be invitational rather than confrontational, I guess. Also, the permission to do the postures and all in your own way, in your own style. There's a tremendous amount of permission. And when I started studying the nervous system, I felt that that description for this kind of yoga wasn't enough, so that I've added a nervous system informed trauma sensitive yoga, which to me gives the whole picture. So that's what I'm most excited about now, after about 10 or 11 years of exploring all of these things.
What is exciting? Like when you wake up in the morning and you get a little jolt of electricity or prana, what is exciting about that to you? Like what makes you want to do this work? You've been doing it for decades. So like what is still exciting to you?
Yeah. Well, I love to see people heal. And I use only techniques that I've used myself mostly for years. Like every morning when I wake up, I do an extended session of alternate nostril breathing. I did it this morning. And it gives me a feeling of stability and strength and health and a lot, you know, vitality. And I was always rather frustrated with talk therapy, as a lot of therapists are. And I think that's one reason why a lot of psychotherapists, based on their own experience, have become yoga teachers also.
I just love that you're not teaching things that you yourself haven't practiced and worked with, and that you have a daily practice. That's so important. I can't tell you how many yoga teachers and yoga therapists quietly admit that I don't have a practice anymore, you know?
No, I still love it. As a matter of fact, after this session, I think I'm going to take a yoga class. I like to be taught as well. I mean, I know all of the postures, of course, but there's something about that interpersonal relationship, which is also balancing for the nervous system. So there are so many ways that yoga classes and techniques are helping us every moment, at least helping me.
Yeah, I mean, you're co-regulating with your teacher. You're maybe co-regulating with the whole group if you're going to a group class. You're doing postures and breath work and meditative exercises while in this group with this teacher. I mean, it's just like coming at the nervous system from every doorway to have this impact. And I think, you know, going back to what you said at the beginning, you started yoga and you thought, whoa, I feel different. I think most of us had that moment where we were like, what is this? What just happened to me? And where can I get more of this? You know, it was like the feeling of sattva. In Pali Vagal, we would call it social engagement system or ventral vagal. But that feeling is so unique. Like, I don't know of very many things in life that we can consciously get there. You know, sometimes it happens that we just get into this flow state, but you're going to a yoga class this morning with an intention. You did your alternate nostril breathing this morning with an intention to get into that ventral vagal state. Beautiful.
It was born of necessity.
Tell me more about that, because I feel that way too. Tell me more about that.
I naturally had a tense body, and I was very uncomfortable and always enjoyed moving. To combine movement with healing is just wonderful.
You are just throwing out gems here. Every one of these gems could be an individual podcast. Like, that statement of combining movement with healing is a deep statement. It's the difference between I'm going to the gym to work out and make sure that I lift weights to get my bone density and make sure I'm strong and it's on my checklist and there I did it. It's taking it to a whole nother realm of, I want to feel my body. I want to sense my body. I want to be embodied. I want to feel my breath inside of me as I'm moving. I want to feel my mind settling as I'm moving. It's just like a whole different deal than a workout.
Sure. And some of the things that I've learned more recently, for example, about the use of the eyes to regulate the nervous system have been just fascinating. Like sitting here now, I know that if I look around the room and let my eyes go where they want to go, I'm regulating my nervous system. And I may be changing the muscle tension in the back of my neck, but the way I move my eyes, and that will change the amount of blood flow that goes to the brain, which can change my state of consciousness, taking me out of fight or flight and putting me into the present moment. I'm still learning all of these things, and it gives my life more meaning, you know, moment by moment.
I think that's what's so amazing about yoga is these ancient sages mapped out this huge system with all these different tools, technologies, techniques, but also lifestyle management. And we are just discovering them. And people like you and I who've been doing this for decades, you much longer than myself, probably, like, wow, we're still discovering that EMDR is very close to a dristi, or using your eyes on different focal points. We're all just seeing the science start to come together in our lifetime. I feel so grateful for that. How about you?
Definitely. This is a wonderful time in history to become a psychotherapist who is nervous system informed and yoga informed. Unfortunately, I'm just ending my career, but you know, I'm sending out my greatest excitement to those of you who are beginning it or in the early stages. So one thing I realized from my studies was that the ancient yogis must have known all about the functioning of the autonomic nervous system. It's very obvious to me. In some ways, yoga was a little bit ahead of the neuroscientists. Even now, there's more to discover and explore about these connections.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's no doubt when you see these maps of neuroscience and then you compare that to the maps that the ancient yogis had and the models, it's like, of course, there's no doubt. Yeah.
I'm going to take just a couple of minutes away from this episode to tell you about our Masters of Science in Yoga Therapy at Notre Dame of Maryland School of Integrative Health. Hi, I'm Amy Wheeler, and I am the department chair. And I am so proud of what is developing at Notre Dame of Maryland in this Masters of Science program. It is the only Masters of Science at an accredited university in the nation, and we're doing such great clinical work. We find that because of the clinical setting, the electronic medical records, and the training that we can give through a university setting, that our graduates are finding jobs out there in the field of yoga and yoga therapy. With a master's degree, in addition to your certified yoga therapist designation, I think you'll find that it's much easier to find work. We would love to talk to you more. We have one open house per month. If you email me, I can help you find out how to get to the open house and how to get more information. Check out the show notes and let's get you looking into Notre Dame of Maryland's Masters of Science in Yoga Therapy. Thanks so much for listening. Back to the show.
Another one of my personal beliefs is that the different limbs of yoga that are more embodied are more valuable for trauma healing, that the connection with the body is very important to cultivate. So I focus on the yamas and niyamas course, but also on hatha yoga and pranayama and yoga nidra to some degree. But in my work, I save meditation, and in general, save meditation in the higher states for someone who starts to feel that they're in charge of their nervous system regulation. So I don't know if that's a controversial point or not.
No, I don't think so at all. I mean, there are so many studies out there showing that meditation can be harmful if you're in complex trauma, deep, you know, these places where your mind isn't stable yet, that it actually can be harmful to bring people into meditative states. So that's kind of what I think when I hear you say that. And I agree with you. I think the reason we as Americans have fallen so in love with asana and the postures is because we are disembodied. We're living from the neck up. And finally, we can start to feel that interoceptive awareness inside of ourselves, those sensations, those feelings, like we're coming home to our bodies, which is a very unique and interesting feeling for a lot of people that haven't felt in a really long time. Do you want to say anything about that?
I have a vision that slowly the culture will shift due to the emphasis on yoga and other meditative movement disciplines, as well as polyvagal theory, that safety becomes the most important factor for creating a healthy individual and eventually a healthy culture. So yeah. I'm rooting for that.
Are there any things that we should watch out for as psychotherapists, social workers, even yoga teachers, yoga therapists around the nervous system that we should be aware of that people could get hurt or maybe it would even make their conditions worse? Is there anything that you would tell young teachers of this type of work that they should maybe be aware of?
Well, simply that the most important factor is to help the individual connect with their own inner experience. Because if they're connected, then they can start to set limits and protect themselves. And I'm talking about not only in yoga practice, but in their life in general. So to cultivate that and make sure in whatever way possible that the client is connected to themselves or that the yoga student is, rather than sort of going along with the program. And so that can be a lengthy process of helping someone make that deep connection, because that's exactly what's lost in a trauma situation. And even for mild trauma, because of the pace of our society or, you know, so many things that they've really lost contact, or they think that it's too much of a luxury to really go at an organic pace to live their life from the inside out. But that's what health is to me. And that is pretty radical.
It is radical to center the client, the patient, the student on their internal process of connecting and recognizing that that could take a few years if they've been very disconnected for a long time. Like, that is radical. It doesn't sound like it. Those words don't sound like it. But the work that you do, it's deep to keep turning it back over to them and centering them.
Yeah. So I also like to build in some fun, actually, some like enjoyment of this process, because it can be like someone is having trouble connecting with their sensations. I might ask them to just open and close their hand or one finger, see if they could describe what it feels like. I mean, start in small bits, you know, to titrate the experience, in the words of Peter Levine, I think, so that they'll be successful. That's one thing that titration means to me, is that we take learning in small enough bits, it will be a good experience rather than overwhelming.
I think that is a huge thing, especially when I think of psychotherapists using this in their work. We don't have to do these big, extravagant things. They can be as much as your pointer finger saying and extending and really feeling that and connecting with that. For many people, I think they would be like, what the heck is that? That can't do anything. But that's the tiny little entry door, as opposed to, I had someone tell me last week that taking a class with someone who wasn't deeply trained, and the person had them doing a breath technique as a first-time yoga person with an 8-count hold after inhale.
Mm-hmm.
Like, whoa, that's a lot to hold your breath for 8 counts on the top of the inhale. I really love this idea about, can we all bring it back about 45 steps and really work with embodiment of the pointer finger before we try to embody the entire system and maybe flood people and overwhelm them?
Yeah. I just thought of another very controversial area, which therapists could proceed with caution, is I was taught by Satchidananda that when you hold the breath, either at the top of the inhale or the bottom of the exhale, you're inviting the kundalini energy at the base of the spine to start to rise. And I actually haven't heard or read that from any other teacher, but that is definitely what we were taught. That can dysregulate a person on a very deep level. Our latent spiritual energies are stored in the body. You know, there are a lot of examples in the 1960s where people did vigorous pranayama and they did all kinds of practices to tear open their body and raise the kundalini, to raise that energy, to become enlightened, to bring, you know, the subtle energy up the chakras and up to the top of the head. And that was very dangerous. Some of them ended up in psychiatric hospitals. I'm a very cautious person. That may be starting to show, but I'm a little bit worried.
Or discerning. Let's say discerning.
I'm worried about breath holds, particularly for someone who is coming to a therapist because their nervous system is dysregulated. I think this is an area I think the profession could address at some point. What's the real effect, if there is one, of holding the breath?
I completely agree. I remember very early on as a yoga therapist, I had a student come to me that had been doing all of these kundalini-inducing exercises for a couple of years, and she was shaking, like her hands, everything was shaking, and she couldn't get it to stop. And it wasn't something at that point psychotherapy could even work with, because it wasn't mental. She had disturbed her prana, disturbed her neurophysiology. So, of course, I referred her to a neurophysiologist and, you know, trying to help her on the medical side. But on the yogic side, I tried to help her soothe and calm and pacify and ground more. And it actually, even though I was kind of a beginner yoga therapist at the time, just using these ancient models from the yogis, like it actually worked.
I'm glad to hear that.
So when someone comes in highly dysregulated, Joanne, what are the things that you look at to decide, should I be giving them movement or should we do a breathing technique or should we be in relationship together? Like, how do you determine what they need? Or is that too big of a question for this podcast?
I can give it a shot. I would go very slowly and make as much connection as possible, you know, based on what I've learned in different body-based systems, like somatic experiencing. Watch their breathing pattern and encourage them to maybe use their eyes first to look around the room. You know, it's an orientation exercise. It's interesting that it's complementary to the yoga eye movements, but it's not exactly the same thing. That often gives a person a feeling of more connection in the room to the room and relaxes the body. There's like a let down feeling and releasing the stress and the tension. Also, soothing themselves, you know, having them gently touch their own body, their own skin, you know, things that are easy that don't require too much engagement with me at first. And then build that very slowly over time, making sure that their will is aligned with mine, that they really want this. There might even be a written simple type of contract is, yes, I am interested in working with my body in this psychotherapy session. So then, I mean, then move on to the breath, perhaps. Of course, depending on the client and what I observe, taking just breathing and observing the breath just the way it is, not changing anything. That's an excellent practice. And then slowly, if the client is able and willing to do other simple movements, such as raising their arms over their head, that creates a natural deep breath, which is also used in many yoga postures. But my approach to yoga, based on someone in street clothes or maybe in a business suit who comes into a session, and I wouldn't put them on a mat. I keep them in a chair. So the chair yoga postures, as much as traditional as possible to build safety into what we're doing at first.
I love that you said it depends on the person. And it sounds to me like you're kind of exploring step by step. You're not coming in with, I'm going to teach them long exhale breathing, or I'm going to do this to them. It's more that I'm going to connect with them, feel out where they are, what their capacity is, what kind of titration we might have today, if we need to back off, if we sense there's some overwhelm or flooding, stabilizing again. I mean, it's a very gentle, slow process. And then I know this has happened to me in psychotherapy as well as yoga therapy. That feeling of safety that I obtain in that hour, I'm examining and digesting it and working back towards it all week or all month, depending on how often I'm going. And it's kind of like a guidepost where, oh, can I get back to that feeling I had in Joanne's office? Do you find that your clients feel that way?
Or maybe,
no.
There are some very dear clients. I know that the trust is well, well established. And in that case, you know, there's a free flow of energy and trust. And with some clients, I know that they're getting certain benefits. And other clients, I may not be sure. If, you know, if the relationship is newer and more distant, if the reason why they're there is more superficial, you know.
I love that honesty. Mm-hmm. I love that. I also really appreciate what you said that, you know, you're coming mainly as a psychotherapist, even though you are a certified yoga therapist, but you said that you have them sign something or sometimes sign something that says, I am willing to work with the body. And I think that's really interesting because just very recently, the American Psychological Association and some different areas of social workers are pushing back a little bit on this body-oriented way of approaching our mental health, if you will. Do you know anything about that? What do you think of that? I mean, I could give a bunch of examples, but I just wonder if you know anything about that.
I've been teaching trainings for about 10 years, and I produced a lot of them myself. So I was getting the continuing education credits myself from major organizations that regulate different professions. And over the years, they've become more and more restrictive about which type of courses they will offer CEs for. And it has gotten to a point where I wasn't even offering CEs anymore for some of my work because they just wouldn't approve them. I think it's different if I was working with a large organization who was sponsoring the course, that they have more leverage.
I don't think so, Joanne. I'm working with the largest nervous system regulation, you know, organization who can no longer offer CEs as of about a month ago.
Oh, gee, I'd like to talk to you more about that. I'm not sure it'd be interesting to everybody. But,
we could do that offline, but it's really pushing back. And in places like the Veterans Administration, they've asked all social workers not to do yoga type things on the mat, that saying basically you're not trained in these body oriented modalities and therefore stay in your scope of practice. So I think, you know, we're really seeing that trend now, which in some ways opens up a doorway for people like yoga therapists that are trained in the body-based modalities, which I kind of think that's great. That's cool, you know?
Sure. As long as it's not shutting out of working with the body altogether. I was concerned that that's what was happening.
And that is a fine point to put on this. If they take this away from psychotherapists and social workers, some would argue that there is great harm done in not allowing them to work with the body, you know? Yeah. So when I see someone so dedicated to yoga like yourself for all these decades, like, that makes me sad to think that that might have to be separated for people like you to get CEs, not in your private practice, but.
You know, I have a lot of feelings about the CE industry, which is appropriate to talk about.
We won't go there. Yeah. Okay, well, let us move on. What else would you like to tell us about your work, the books you've written? What do you want us to know as we leave our time together today that's really important for you to share with us?
This may be backing us up a little bit, but I have been so delighted to find three major correspondences between not just psychotherapy, but the whole medical field and traditional yoga, as described in the Yoga Sutras and other texts. Well, one of them is the very simple. It's just the healing potential of working with the body, you know, with the right side and the left side and the inhale and the exhale, which, by the way, model the back and forth between sympathetic and parasympathetic dominance. Every breath, you know, every movement can influence that and strengthen the oscillation between the two of them. Anyway, so that's one level is very beneficial for health. The next level is the subtle level, the subtle energies that course through our bodies that emanate in these subtle nerves, which make up what's known traditionally as the aura. I do believe in that, and it's part of the yoga tradition. And it shows up in very significant ways. One of the ways I mentioned was the difference between the left nostril and the right nostril and how therapeutic that information is and those practices are. Western medicine knows about the cycle between the left nostril and the right nostril. Yeah, the cycle of dominance switches every few hours, but they don't know what to make of it. They don't make anything of it. So yoga, in my observation, could complete their knowledge of that system. And then the next level of correspondence is with the gunas, which is a more foreign concept than a lot of other yoga concepts. but it mirrors the autonomic nervous system also. Something I noticed independently in my studies, maybe about, 8 or 10 years ago, that Rajas energy is similar to an overactivated sympathetic nervous system state. It's described by using the same words in ancient texts, and the tamas state of the nervous system is in yoga a very lethargic kind of shut down energy, exactly the same as a depressed parasympathetic energy. And then sattva, which is the balanced light kind of peaceful energy, is the combination of the two, the integration of the two, and also describing what happens when someone regulates their nervous system on the elemental level. So we have the physical level, the energetic level, and the elemental level, where both approaches are either complementary or the same. This is very important to me, to get down to the most basic level and describe the relationships.
You know, Joanne, I know you've written a book, which I want to talk about in a minute, but what you've just described is the book that myself and Marlisa Sullivan have just turned into our publisher, which should be out in the spring of 2026. Like, we really wanted people to understand those concepts. So as I said, when I saw your work, I was like, wow, this is another human that is really, really in the same area of interest and passion that myself and Marlisa are. Oh, so
it's nice to know. I didn't know about that.
Yeah, well, we've just turned it in, so it's not out yet. But tell us about your book.
Okay. Well, the title is Trauma Healing in the Yoga Zone. So what I did is I took the window of tolerance diagram, which is becoming more and more well known. You know, I overlaid the yoga system onto the window of tolerance, so that when someone is over aroused in the, you know, above the window, that's considered to be an area of anxiety, panic. So I've also called it the Rajasic zone. And then the same thing with the area below the window of tolerance, which is known as an area in psychotherapy as dysthymia, depression. And of course, I called it the Tamasic area. So it's like one chart that overlays, that describes both of them, both systems. And I renamed the window of tolerance, that area in the center where everything is regulated and balanced, as the yoga zone, because that's where yoga brings us. And so that's where the title of the book comes from. And my chapters, they follow along the limbs of yoga, starting out with yama and niyama. And then there's a chapter on the postures, and another on the breathing practices, another on yoga nidra, another on meditation, and then the integration of that with psychotherapy or yoga therapy. So it was written for professionals. And there's a lot of charts and graphs which give guidance. For example, taking someone in a session who comes in a very depressed state, is how to slowly, over the course of maybe 20 minutes, half an hour, teach them different practices which will slowly regulate the system and bring them into the yoga zone. So I have a different chart which does the opposite. Take someone who is very overwrought and maybe hysterical even, and bring them slowly down again into the yoga zone.
Beautiful.
Yeah, that's a small overview of the book. On another book, I'd like to have one published that's not just for therapists, that's for everyone. Yeah, so I'm starting work on that.
You know, I think as much as you and I and so many of us love the depth of this work, and we have targeted our writings and lectures and all of our offerings, even this podcast, on the practitioners, I think it is time now to go out to the general public and share this at a wider scale, that it's not just in the elite places where you have to, you know, pay for all this education. It's really nice to think about, let's bring it into the public now.
Oh, sure. I want everyone to be aware of these very simple things that they can do to regulate their nervous system. It doesn't cost anything. It's not that difficult. But it's so deeply important for the health of our country, of our society, of the world. I mean, this information is revolutionary to me, the polyvagal theory and just the focus on the autonomic nervous system. It's what's been missing, one thing that's been missing in medicine and psychotherapy in their development.
We are so on the same page. You know, we have developed, it's called the Optimal State mobile app. And you basically check in with your state according to the gunas, or you can choose the nervous system states. And then it gives you these little mini interventions on what you could do to feel better. So I'm just laughing, and that's for the general public. So I'm just kind of laughing at the parallels here. I also want to go back to your website, which is www.joannlutz.com, JoannLutz.com. Are there any upcoming programs that you want us to know about?
Yes, there are. And I guess I need to update my website because that's something that's already happened. About once a month, I like to offer a free question and answer session online. Mm-hmm. I have a newsletter, which I would enjoy sharing with anyone who's interested, where I include some latest research, some of my latest thinking, and information about what's coming up.
Yeah. Can I just ask you, how would we find your newsletter? Is that on your website? You can register for it?
Yes, you can go to my website and sign up for my newsletter.
On your website, at the very bottom of the homepage, there is a place to sign up for the newsletter.
Thank you. So I also work with an organization called the Light Movement, which is headquartered in Colorado, which is giving free services to people who are grieving, a lot of yoga-based classes and services. So I'm going to be giving a three-hour workshop with them online, which is going to be a charge for. This kind of information would be on my website, which you can always go to. And I'm working on an audio book version of my printed book right now. So I hope that'll be finished soon. You can, you know, be on the lookout for it.
You know, you have such a gentle presence and a prosodic voice, as Stephen Porges would say. So I was listening to Wayne Dyer yesterday, and he's the same. He's just got a very calming, soothing voice. So I think having your book on audio where people could listen while they're walking or breathing or moving, it's a whole nother area to use your voice to help us co-regulate. So I'm really excited to hear that.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm enjoying your modulated voice also.
Some of us have it, and it's a real gift that I think sometimes we take for granted. So Joanne, is there anything you'd like to say as we close today? Any last bits of wisdom that you could share with us?
There is. I think Swami Satchidananda encapsulated this whole area of nervous system regulation in one phrase. He said, take it easy, but don't be lazy. That was one of his favorite statements, and reinterpreted it into a nervous system regulation framework. And it's easy to remember. So, you know, it's like, don't go up into the dysregulated state and everything will be fine.
I love that. And that was one of Swami Satchitananda's gifts, is to take these kind of complex concepts and bring them into something like that. Like, take it easy. Don't push yourself. Don't hurry. Don't rush. And don't be lazy. Get your work done.
Yeah, right. Puts us right in the yoga zone.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Joanne, for being here today. I'm so grateful that you were able to join us. And I wish you well. And we'll put all the links to the different things you talked about into the show notes. So thanks for being here.
Thank you so much. I've enjoyed it.
Thank you, Joanne Lutz, for being with us today. It was such a pleasure to interview you. And as just a little parting gift, I want to share something with our listeners that sounds like Joanne does, and I also do, and that is this focus on nostril regulation, right and left, and kind of noticing if there's one side that's more dominant more of the time, and having the right nostril dominance available to you when you're doing more active activities, and the left nostril dominance when you're winding down, resting, sleeping, that type of thing. And so I have people either put their hand underneath their nostrils to kind of feel which one has the air coming out, or if there's maybe really hot air coming out of the right side or cool air coming out of the left side. But if you're watching this on the video, which we always show on YouTube, in addition to the audio, which you hear on all of your major podcast platforms, but if you're watching this, you can see that I have the dark screen of my phone and I can just lightly place my phone. You could also do it with a mirror underneath your nostrils, maybe half an inch, and then close your mouth and exhale. And you can see, I don't know if you can see which nostril is dominant. And I'm in sattva. I have both happening about the same moisture level, the same size showing up on the dark screen of my phone. So just wanted to show you that little trick that you can use to kind of test yourself multiple times a day. And then, like I said, we do have this mobile app that helps you check in with if you're in different states of nervous system regulation, or you can also look at it through the lens of the gunas. And what are some light interventions you could use to regulate yourself? So that goes along beautifully with Joanne's work as well as our work. And it's the Optimal State mobile app on the iPhone store as well as the Android store. And you can try it for free and see if it's a helpful tool for you. And I also tell people it's only $5 a month. So it's also a way you could support this gift of the podcast that we like to give you, that it's kind of a way of contributing $5 a month if you're really into the podcast and listening to it on a regular basis and would like to show us some appreciation. All right, everyone, have a great day and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for being a listener of the Yoga Therapy Hour podcast. We have done over 200 episodes and we have had over 200,000 downloads, and we hope that in some small way we have supported you mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. If you'd like to support the Yoga Therapy Hour podcast in 2026, there's several meaningful ways you can do so. First, you can become a member of our Patreon community and donate as little as $5 a month to keep the podcast going. Your contribution helps us to sustain the depth and quality of conversations on the podcast. A second option is that you become an Optimal State mobile app member for both Android and iPhone. Again, this is about $5 a month, and we're going to start providing a lot of amazing content on our mobile app in 2026. We'll definitely want you to be part of that community. We also have a book coming out called Applications of Therapeutic Yoga in Integrative Health. This book will be published by Routledge Publisher in spring 2026. It's written by Amy Wheeler and Marlisa Sullivan. We hope you'll consider purchasing this book when it comes out in the spring of 2026. Again, the name is Applications of Therapeutic Yoga in Integrative Health by Wheeler and Sullivan. For those of you who are seeking advanced training in therapeutic yoga or in yoga therapy, please consider checking out the programs at Notre Dame of Maryland School of Integrative Health. We have a MS in yoga therapy, and we also have a post-master's degree therapeutic yoga for licensed healthcare providers that's starting in the fall of 2026. In addition, we have a comprehensive Ayurveda certificate program also geared towards licensed healthcare providers. Each one of these programs is a pathway designed to support healthcare professionals and yoga teachers and yoga therapists who are ready to integrate these teachings into clinical, education, and community settings. All right, thanks for listening and thanks for supporting the Yoga Therapy Hour podcast.
We wish you a wonderful week. We hope that somehow, in a small way, we've contributed to your well-being so that you can go out and share that well-being with others. That's what life is all about, bringing in the goodness through you and then shining it out to the world. We need you more than ever. So let's all get out there, do good, be good, and have a great week.